folks from Rivers Response invited some community member speakers from SRLP, Kitchen Table Giving Circle, and community activists to come together to meet and talk about transcending exclusion. And basically, we met each other in conversation about raising awareness and inclusion in LGBTQ art spaces. Particularly as artists and producers, we found ourselves thinking about how to create inclusive spaces that respect multiple identities and audiences.
And what brought us together was witnessing some conflict in some art spaces and some sort of back and forth about dialogue, and we really realized that we needed to find community with each other and really reach out to different folks coming from a lot of different experiences, but who felt really strongly that trans inclusion, and in particular the inclusion of trans women, is really important in queer spaces, in lesbian spaces, in gay spaces, so on and so forth, really just in the community. Some of us really witness that issue get pushed to the side very often, so it became a really important focusing point for us. We were really motivated not in any way to represent that, but to come together as different folks from different places, different experiences, and create community, because we felt that one part of the community getting pushed to the side means that we all lose a lot of our collective and community building power.
Partially inspired by ongoing events in queer POC arts organizing, and more importantly, inspired by a desire to create cross-community alliances, we started having conversations about what truly inclusive queer and trans POC art spaces could look like. And one incident that came to light as we were meeting each other was some troubling language and policy changes at Rivers of Honey, a performance space that is very important to a lot of members of the group. So we decided to start organizing together to inspire broad dialogue about that issue. Trans inclusion is an incredibly important issue for us as a group to talk about, despite our different relationships to trans identity. And we're here to have a broad conversation about how language about trans people affects our community building as a whole.
So tonight we've brought all of you together and come together ourselves to talk about some of these issues that we feel are important. As has already been stated, exclusion is a really big problem in many institutions, as many of us who are involved in social justice work battle every day, right? Schools, hospitals, the workplace. But I think something that we often don't talk about enough is creative spaces, artistic spaces, activist spaces within our communities. And tonight's discussion is really going to specifically focus, as our Facebook invite said, on communities of color. So when we talk about communities of color, as a group of people who face structural oppression, systemic oppression in communities of color, what does it mean to have exclusion come up within those communities, and specifically within queer and women's spaces in communities of color? I want to go ahead and introduce myself and everyone here by name, so you all have names to put with faces. I'm Amitha Swadin. This is Cal Celiani. You met Chris and Zave. Naomi Clark, who's also representing Sylvia Rivera Law Project tonight, and who's going to be one of our speakers tonight. Lucia Leandro Jimeno, a longtime activist in the community, is also another speaker tonight. Kim Ford, where are you, from the Kitchen Table Giving Circle, is going to be speaking about why her organization is inclusive of trans women as a space for women of color. And in general, you'll be hearing from folks who were past producers of Rivers of Honey and were some of the folks who started the impetus for Rivers Response when we saw some of the changes happening in the Rivers of Honey space. So we're going to have a roundtable discussion with some of those folks I pointed out, with their perspective on why trans inclusion in social justice movements is important. And then we'll open it up for some questions and answers from all of you, and some, you know, just more general dialogue. And I want to hear from you about why you came to this space and what you feel the stake is for our communities. We definitely don't see this as a one-sided conversation, but we want to have a common foundation to start the discussion as well. So, does that sound good to everyone? Cool. So in talking over the past 3 months with each other, and many of you know, we put out a Facebook statement as well that went out to over 3,000 people throughout the country. What it generated was not only a lot of community dialogue, but I think a lot of feelings of fear and uncertainty in how to move forward, not just from some of us, but from some of the folks still involved in Rivers of Honey. And we want to be really clear about our intentions tonight. Our intentions are not at all, first of all, not at all to solely focus on Rivers of Honey. We think that the issues that are brought up by this example have much more widespread implications in other spaces in our community as queer and trans people of color. We're also not interested in blaming. We definitely have discussed a lot about cases that we have caused harm personally and in organizations we've been part of, intentionally or not. And we've had to be held accountable or do some learning and take responsibility for the ways that we may have hurt people. And so we don't see ourselves as perfect, and we're really interested in dialogue and learning. So that's the spirit in which we gathered with each other over the past 3 months, and we ask that you come to this space with that spirit in mind as well, and that we really, in the question and answer period tonight, stay away from blaming anyone and focus on, like, what are the ideological issues here that are sort of invested in this dialogue and the implications of them and the impact of those ideologies on real people's lives, people who are members of our communities. Make sense to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So with that in mind, and given that we may have different perspectives in the room and we want to allow room for that, we want to allow room for some disagreement, I think what we need to do is just set some guidelines to have that be a respectful process. So I'm going to ask Zabe or Cal to write up some guidelines. One that we wanted to offer, and Naomi, please introduce any that I missed, is one mic, which is just one person speaking at a time. And along with how we're going to facilitate that process, we're going to be using a progressive stack tonight. Which basically means a stack, a traditional stack is basically like you raise your hand, we take the numbers down and the names down. But tonight we're going to especially be prioritizing the voices of folks who are directly affected. So people of color in the room, trans folks in the room, people who might not have been a part of the original dialogues that were emerging around this issue. And if we have time for everyone's voices to be heard in the stack, we will do that. But we want to make sure that this really is a community-centered conversation. With that in mind, though, we don't want certain voices to dominate, so we're also going to use move up, move back as a guideline. If you're someone who likes to be very verbal, I know I am this way. I often have to check myself and let others step forward. And if you're someone who often doesn't talk, but you are directly affected by this issue, we encourage you to move forward.
Is Rivers of Honey representative?
It's a good question. I mean, we have former Rivers producers.
Former Rivers producers and artists. You're
I'm an artist. I'm an artist. Chris is a producer.
Mm-hmm. The art developers are the audience as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your question. We're going to ask people to also, as a guideline, use I statements. Speak from your own experience. Try not to speak for others or to make generalizations. Certainly no personal attacks. Again, in that spirit of respecting each other and learning together. Logistically about this space, it seems like right now we have enough chairs, but you'll notice that we do have a limited number of chairs. I think we're at this point almost out. So if other folks walk into the space who you notice are disabled and need a seat, we ask that those of you who could do without a seat, give your seat up as they walk in. Other logistical thing is taking care of your needs. If at any time you feel triggered or you just need a break from the conversation or you're feeling warm, there's a water pitcher around this corner with a sink. The bathroom is right here behind Cal. You could totally step outside and get some fresh air. And we'll keep to the time boundaries as well, just so you know we don't get into a conversation that drags. But we have to check in with yourself and do what you need to do to feel good about the space. The last one is oops and ouch, and I feel like I'm talking a lot, and Naomi had a really nice way to explain that, so if you want to introduce that to everyone.
Sure, so oops and ouch is a way of addressing conflict or hurtful or problematic statements without disrupting the flow of conversation, but still showing respect for when things happen, which might affect you personally in a way that you want to acknowledge. So when someone is speaking, if you hear them say something that you find personally hurtful, offensive, or problematic, you can say oops. And that's a signal to everyone in the room, and also to the speaker, and as well, and also to the person who is keeping the staff, that something was said that you found problematic. And the speaker can then say, actually, did I have that backwards?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You can just say ouch. If something is said and you're like, what the hell? That kind of hurt. That stung. Then the person who's speaking, if they want to acknowledge that they maybe could have said something better, or they said something they shouldn't have, can say oops to acknowledge that they may have done something which was unadvisable. Now then, afterwards, after the person is done talking, the person who's keeping staff can then ask the person who said ouch whether they want to elaborate and say and explain why they said ouch. And also the person who said oops can then, you know, acknowledge or apologize. And that's optional. If you say ouch, you don't necessarily need to explain why. You can just have your feeling of hurt go out there and be heard by everybody.
So those were the guidelines that we thought of. I just want to take a moment to ask if any of you have other ones that you don't see represented up here that you feel are important tonight.
Yeah. Assume best intentions, ask for clarification if something is problematic.
Thank you. Did everyone hear that? Assume best intentions and ask for clarification if something seems problematic. Yeah.
I just have a question about the progressive staff, which is a really important theory, but how exactly are you identifying people who may be trans or people of color, mm-hmm. or etc.?
That's a very good question.
In this circumstance, it's mostly going to be like people who aren't talking a lot. it's going to be sort of people who haven't. We don't want a couple voices to dominate the conversation. That's sort of how it is. It's going to be it's not going to be like, do you look like you're a person of color? Do you look trans? Like, yeah. That's not how it's going to be going.
I have a similar kind of request. But a lot of disabilities are not visible, so if we could just, if I can't tell right now, but like if a lot of people are standing, maybe like halfway through, if we could just check in and like ask if someone needs to sit, that would be helpful.
Great. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anyone else? Okay, then let's go ahead and get started.
So, hi, I would like to say ouch. I think the panel has been stacked, saying, lesbians have no right to define their own space because other people will be hurt by that.
Does anybody want to address that ouch comment?
I'm sorry, we didn't hear Becky.
I said ouch because I hear by the presentation and by the panelists that the message that I'm hearing is that lesbians have no right to define their space because other people will be hurt by it.
We haven't actually started the discussion yet.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk a lot about that. And also I think, you know, there are a lot of people on the panel and in the room who identify as lesbians, you know, and so it's about space for people who identify as queer, who identify as lesbian, identify as dyke, so a lot of different words, and also to acknowledge the multiplicity of those identities, right? So it's not necessarily that someone who identifies as lesbian doesn't also have other types of identities, right? So what happens when someone who is transgender and also is a lesbian, like what kind of space does that person get to be in lesbian space, defined as lesbian space? Those kinds of questions, I think, are really the substance of the discussion that we want to have. And I think we're going to be talking about a lot of things. We look at the past history of this issue and then talk about things that have happened recently, and then get to a discussion that hopefully will actually be talking about exactly your concern.
I'd also like to, if I could just throw out there that some lesbians might want to define the space as an inclusive space as well. So,
right.
Like, I just wanted to push that out there.
Mm-hmm. And just to answer your question from earlier, whether the rumors are kind of represented here, this was an open forum. Everyone, it was a public invitation. There were no requisites to get in, or if you didn't have to pay, or you didn't have to sit through a show. It was an open forum, open dialogue. The invitation went out. Yeah.
And I think they're not here too bad, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that it was an open forum. I'm not saying too bad, that those words didn't come out of my mouth. I'm just saying it was an open forum, and everyone was invited. I'm sure that people, everyone was invited as well.
Because they were welcome to speak.
Yeah.
Well, I think that mentioned that they mentioned, and then I'm going
to
be well, look, I want to make one thing clear about Rivers of Honey. No, Rivers of Honey is
Excuse me, we're going to have an actual discussion with a staff later. This is not like an actual discussion. This is dialogue. So we're going to go on with the presentation, and you'll be able to talk about this a little later when we have an open discussion. You'll be able to raise your hand, get on staff. Everyone will get a chance to talk. This is a dialogue. This is disrupting the discussion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just want to make one point of clarity. So Rivers of Honey has been around for a very long time, and there are a lot of people in this room who have helped build that space, who have been part of it, who have been producers there, who have performed there, right? So
they've been long-time audience members.
Yeah, who have been part of the community there for a long time. So that's one of the reasons that Rivers Response was formed and why that's part of the impetus for all coming here. Forum is not just to talk about Rivers of Honey, and we think we want to be really clear about that too. We're talking about the broader issue, and that's what we're going to go into talking right now. So I'll go back to where I was about to say. My name is Naomi Clark. I am a part of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project Collective. We're right upstairs from the offices here, and we got started, almost 10 years ago now, responding to a huge need here in the city. Among the community of low-income and people of color, transgender, gender non-conforming, and intersex people who really had no kind of fair, respectful, or gender-affirming legal representation at the time. And we were seeing all sorts of mistreatment in many walks of life, being kicked out of education, being kicked out of housing, being denied jobs, being mistreated by the police, being mistreated in the criminal justice system, being harassed on the street, you name it. So we started the project in order to try and address a lot of those things. And the project was named after Sylvia Rivera, who was a very prominent activist who died in 2001. She was instrumental in getting the gay rights movement started here in New York City and really sparking a lot of activism that happened across the entire country. And we're about to show a clip that is one of our other collective members, Raina Gossett. She spoke at Occupy Wall Street just earlier this month. And she was talking quite a bit about the history of Pride Parades, the first Pride Parade that was here in New York, the role of Sylvia Rivera, Marsha P. Johnson, and other trans women of color activists. And it's actually very relevant to this whole conversation we're having, which I'm going to come back to after we watch the clip. But I hope the clip is really useful for thinking about how all of these types of movements are really heavily intersect and how it can be very divisive when we try to pull the strands apart and act like these things don't actually flow together and that many of us aren't affected by a multiplicity of oppressions overlapping. So we'll pull up the...
I think we're just in the middle of this as well.
So this is Raina on the left. That's me in the middle. You can just ignore me. I'm standing there for most of the time. And since this is at Occupy Wall Street, it's using the people's mic, so you're going to hear her say, give a talk, and then a large crowd of people is going to be repeating back everything that she says. So follow along. Hopefully, it's not too confusing. And you don't need to repeat back what you said.
In this place,
Sylvia Rivera,
Captain Mother Friend,
Gender Non-Conforming People,
explain to the allies.
Nor explain to the allies.
Why they were occupying NYU.
Why they were occupying NYU.
Rather than leaving with everyone else.
Rather than leaving with everyone else.
They wrote.
They wrote.
All that we fought for.
All that we fought for.
At Weinstein Hall.
At Weinstein Hall.
Was lost.
Was lost.
When we left.
When we left.
Upon the request.
Upon the request.
Of the king.
Of the king.
You people run.
You people run.
If you want to.
If you want to.
But we're tired of fighting.
But we're tired of fighting.
We intend to fight.
We intend to fight.
For our rights.
For our rights.
Until we get them.
Until we get them.
That's what's happening.
That's what's happening.
In this blow-up.
In this blow-up.
Martha B. Johnson.
Martha B. Johnson.
Protesting.
Protesting.
In front of NYU.
In front of NYU.
You might have worked with her.
You might have worked with her.
Or known that same year.
Or known that same year.
Sylvia Rivera.
Sylvia Rivera.
Organized the first annual.
Organized the first annual.
Christopher Street Liberation March.
Christopher Street Liberation March.
Now known as Gay Pride.
Now known as Gay Pride.
Correct. Now known as Corporate Gay Pride.
Now known as Corporate Gay Pride.
Ended. On purpose.
On purpose.
At the Women's Health Detention Center.
At the Women's Health Detention Center.
In order to connect.
In order to connect.
The mass incarceration.
The mass incarceration.
Of people of color.
Of people of color.
Queer people.
Of queer people.
Of trans people.
Of trans people.
With the ongoing.
With the ongoing.
Organizing.
Organizing.
I'm a revolutionary organization.
I'm a revolutionary organization.
Like the Black Panther Party.
Like the Black Panther Party.
It was no coincidence.
It was no coincidence.
And I see to turn.
And I see to turn.
And Joan Burns.
And Joan Burns.
We're partly incarcerated.
We're partly incarcerated.
At the Women's Health and Detention Center.
At the Women's Health and Detention Center.
And the first annual Christopher Street.
And the first annual Christopher Street.
Liberation March.
Liberation March.
Arrive there.
Arrive there.
Standing.
Standing.
Free ourselves.
Free ourselves.
Free our sisters.
Free our sisters.
Free ourselves.
Free ourselves.
Free our sisters.
Free our sisters.
We set up the space for the panel. I'm going to invite our speakers for tonight, Naomi, LL, Kim, Chris, and Zadway, to go ahead and take seats. We'll turn the lights back on. We're going to give each speaker about 10 minutes to share their prepared remarks, and we ask you guys to hold your comments and questions. I promise that if we can commit to that process, we'll actually have more time to hear from all of you in a facilitated discussion. So can we get agreement on that?
Yes.
Sorry, I haven't been on that. I'm like,
what?
What
is that? Thank you. Let's get the lights back on.
Can I
just
trickle down? Okay.
Does anyone just came in need to share?
Okay.
So, you guys might wonder why we wanted to show you that clip and like what the relevance is to the issue we're talking about today. Hopefully it was clear from that we're talking about a lot of the early pioneers of trans activism here in New York City, people like Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, who were on the front lines of fighting not just for other trans women, but also against homophobia, against police brutality, against, you know, unlawful detention of women. That's why the very first Pride Parade ever actually ended at the Women's Detention Center, to protest the criminal injustice system, as well as against the police crackdown on gay people here in New York City. So, but the story goes on from there, right? And this is where our topic for tonight begins, because it was not long after that, just a couple years later, when they were doing a commemoration of Stonewall, that that Sylvia Rivera was kicked off the stage because one of the other organizing members of that commemoration, a woman named Jean O'Leary, who was the part of a group called Radical Lesbians, complained that she felt that Sylvia Rivera and other trans women were mocking or making fun of real women, and that it was disrespectful to women for trans women to be involved in the nascent, the sort of early gay rights activism movement at all. So there was a huge rift. Sylvia Rivera refused to be silenced, but she was kind of ejected from the event. And that was really one of the beginnings of a split that started to take place over the 1970s. And it was really unfortunate, and it's in that early history that I really see the seeds of the struggles that have gone on in more recent decades to bring us to conversations like this as well. So in the 70s, a lot of the impetus for pushing a lot of the trans activists out of the gay rights movement here in New York City was that they wanted to become more mainstream and more palatable to the media, to the government, and that a lot of the more gender-conforming gay and lesbian activists felt that drag queens and transvestites and other trans people were really holding the movement back. So the idea was that, you know, a lot of promises were made that, okay, you know, just move out of the way for right now and we'll come back later and, you know, we'll sort of work on those issues later. And then, you know, we get to 30, 35 years down the road and, you know, the struggle for gay rights is still very strong and clear and making progress. And, you know, a lot of people have said looking at the current state of gay rights and where, you know, the larger LGBT community is in the United States versus trans people who are far more disproportionately poor, in jail, hit by discrimination in employment and education, dealing with substance abuse problems and so forth, that the trans rights are still about 30 years lagging behind where gay rights are, and that it was a result of a lot of this early exclusion and sort of kicking trans rights to the back of the bus. And it's been a struggle that a lot of trans activists have been fighting for ever since. So what does this have to do with women's spaces, with communities of women and queer women of color? Another thing that happened in the 70s were that there were a lot of lesbian communities around the country where there were trans women in those communities who had been living and working there. And then in the 70s, when this stuff started to foment and bubble up, some of those trans women were actually kicked out of their communities because there was a new idea that trans women were sort of infiltrators or were sort of fake, that their genders were not real, that their identities weren't real, and that they were not actually oppressed as women. And so some of these trans women were actually hounded out of communities where they lived and worked. And in decades since then, a lot of the people who were involved in these sort of early anti-trans women witch hunts have changed their minds. Even Jean O'Leary, the woman who I just mentioned, who got Sylvia Rivera kicked off the stage, changed her mind and through a process of education, you know, later said that she no longer believed that trans women were fake or were just mocking real women. But unfortunately, these kinds of conversations and the idea that trans women were sort of infiltrating women's space continued. And so we've seen this, you know, more recently in the 90s, the debate really came back again with the Michigan Women's Music Festival, sorry. And that's where this term women born women really got started. And that term was really born out of a need by the Michigan Women's Music Festival to say, hey, we don't want trans women around here. We feel that trans women are unsafe, that their genders are not the same, that we want to exclude them from the category of women. And there's a lot of sort of back formulation and saying like, okay, trying to say this is only for women who have a certain type of body, a certain type of experience. But when you boil it down, when you look at the history, you can see over and over again that these categories, what they really functionally do is say all women are fine to access a certain space, but with the exception of one type of woman, which is the transgender woman, right? So that's what it comes down to. And the arguments that were used from all the way from the 70s through the 90s and even more recently hinge on the idea that women have to have certain types of bodies, that women can be reduced to our bodies, or that women all have certain kinds of universal experiences, which is also sort of really goes against what we know about the incredible diversity of experiences, of how people are affected by gendered systems of oppression, and of what kinds of experiences trans women have, right? And then the third leg of that is that they often rely on stereotypes of what trans women are like, right? Like that trans women are just sort of hyper-feminine mockeries, or that trans women's gender are not real. So unfortunately, we're still having to have these conversations, and I think that when we look at the types of language that are used and the types of arguments that we're having, we can really look back over history and see how it split and divided our community. But as we go through, the rest of the speaker's talk, I think we're going to also try to get to a point tonight where we talk about ways forward and ways of healing the community and ways of really trying to treat people and respect people for who they are, for their behavior, and not for assumptions about what their essential being is.
About whether pictures are allowed, but then I realized that we're recording this, so pictures probably are allowed at the panelists. Is everyone in the panel okay? And just if also taking pictures of people in the audience, if anyone does not want pictures taken, you want to raise your hand.
Is there anyone here who's not okay with being recorded during the Q&A or pictures taken?
I told people if that's the case, we would ask everyone to respect it, so
I think we're good. Sorry that we didn't ask it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's my piece. So I'm going to pass the mic. Are you?
Yes,
okay.
Sweet. Hello, everyone. How's everyone doing? Awesome. My name is Lucia Leandro Jimeno. I'm not repping a wonderful organization like SRLP, but I guess you could say I've been around the block a little bit. Before I go over a couple of things, I just want to open up with an excerpt from a letter that Essex Hemphill, who is a Black gay writer, wrote a letter to Audre Lorde, who's one of my many mentors. Not like she personally mentored me, but in her writing. I wish. He said, you once said to me, Essex, no one comes from their consciousness fully developed. In that statement, you summed up for me the daily task of being accountable to ourselves and to one another. Truthful and honest, and of course open to change, committed to change, determined in our willful ways to make change a reality, to replace the cages in the rooms of disempowerment we might choose to dwell without mirrors, without reflection, without courage. You said, look within. You said, don't be afraid. You said, I support you. You said, I love you. You said, man. You said, brother. You welcomed your brothers to come into the circle you were creating. You never barred us from participating in envisioning a new world. You only asked that we be brave, we be strong, we be committed to working for a joint liberation for the oppressed, a joint liberation for us all. You reminded us that new worlds do not come delivered on silver platters. New worlds, new ways of living do require getting the hands dirty. New worlds require more than lip service and appearances. I think it gives me hope that for any queer, trans person of color, that we come from a legacy of really committed to showing up for each other. And I think particularly for a cisgendered man to say to a woman of color that I'm going to be with you and that my commitment is to be part of this liberatory process, I think gives me hope and reminds me of part of a legacy that we're all a part of. I come to this conversation super humbled that Chris asked me to share some of my thinking. They're my truths, not the truth, as a trans masculine person of color who comes from a working class family, but who has private undergraduate degrees and getting another one at another private school. I hold a lot of contradictions around how I'm an ally to women of color, and specifically trans women of color. I've learned that oppressed people that have, we have varying degrees of privilege, that we will act out against our best interest. It's not our fault. It's the colonial project of fragmentation and disconnection. It runs really super deep and really long. And I forgive us. I also do hold us accountable for putting the master's tools to use, as Audre Lorde said. We can never use his tools to liberate us. Divide and conquer will ultimately not work, and clearly you being here starts to prove that. I come to the conversation as someone who was born female-identified, who survived sexual abuse and cancer. And so for me, this is kind of my main entry point into the conversation. If you've ever been identified as female or self-identified as female, we unfortunately share a legacy of being disposable. We're constantly used as weapons and as toys to uphold structures of oppression. And that in the claiming of that space to exclude other people, it means that you've taken to the colonial project super well. And I don't blame anyone for that. It's really hard to shift from that scarcity and fear place. That's a real hard space to shift, particularly if you if the stack is against you on multiple levels. As a mixed race, mixed ethnic trans masculine person who embraces their inner femme, raised by lesbians, I'm constantly having to be comfortable in that in-between space. I get scared when I go into the men's bathroom because that's not a safe space for me. I know that I can't go into the women's bathroom because mothers will clutch their daughters because I'm supposed to be the enemy. And it's never as simple as excluding or including people. It's how we hold how we've all been targeted together and how we work through that. If we don't know sort of our own personal and political histories of violence, then that unknowing turns into a lot of fear, right? Fear perpetuates a lot of stuff. What we don't know, we just kind of, for survival reasons, we just go, that's over there. I don't want that. That's ugly. And I think as two women of color friends talked in a paper that they wrote, is that fear is the fuel that leads to our exclusion. We've been denied a lot of our collective stories, and part of that history for women and trans folks is that we actually have, there are stories around how we've lived in solidarity with each other. I don't know all of them, but I know that some of them. I know in my own family, raised by a dyke immigrant mom, she had trans men in her house growing up, supporting them when their families kicked them out. And even recently, as of, I think, 2 months ago, she's working on a theater project around survivors, women survivors of sexual assault, and she was like, how do I include trans women, and how do I make sure that they're not just, like, window dressing to say, ooh, ooh, we're inclusive? Like, what does that process really look like? And she's not perfect. Her pronoun stuff can be really good one day and not so great the other, but I know that she's, like, super committed. And as someone who's an elder, dyke, immigrant woman of color, like, there are many stories, and my family is not the only one. And I think it's up to all of us to think about how we uncover that. When I think about sort of what has brought us here today, is that I think a lot about the medical establishment. I think about the police, and I think about cisgender male privilege. And that we have to really think about what are the shared spaces that cisgendered women and trans women occupy together. And I think a lot about the body, that the body is a site of a lot of violence and a lot of grief and a lot of sadness at how women's bodies, whether trans or cisgendered, have been completely used to keep us down. For example, North Carolina, from 1929 to 1974, women were being sterilized without their consent because they were deemed promiscuous, feeble-minded, and they were, because they were poor, because they were black, because they were native, because they were Latina, that they didn't deserve to have agency over their own body. In 1970, you know, George W. Bush created the Family Planning Act, where it was federally funded monies to sterilize people who were under certain categories, and all of them were women. So again, there's a legacy of using women's bodies to be like, you don't actually deserve to have agency over how you get to be in the world. Again, Puerto Rican women in the 1940s were the first guinea pigs for the pill. So there's a long history of women, in particular poor women of color, their bodies being used, right? And then we think about sex workers, where that's a space that cisgendered women, women of color, trans women occupy often, right? The conditions under which sex workers work are violent. Often they're really unsafe, where folks are coerced in terms of not being allowed to use protection for their own bodies. Sex workers are super vulnerable to violence and death, as we can see if you just go to the West Village, you go to the piers in New York City. There was even one study that said that 42% of trans women sex workers met all the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. So again, cisgendered women and trans women have this overlapping history and current history of like how our bodies, their bodies are being used to really uphold like a lot of really fucked up things. And that the majority of folks who are sex workers are Black and Latina in the United States. And I think that's not a, I don't think that's an accident. So when I think about like how we think about moving forward, think about like a history and a legacy, and really remembering that this is what we have to remember in order to move forward. That it's not a mistake that we've been divided up. Thank you. And I just want to share just one last thing with you that I think is super crucial. That Lisa Weiner Mofus and Ana Marie Mata, who created this website called Busting Binaries, two really wonderful, amazing queer women of color who are my actual mentors. Because I feel like for me as a trans masculine person, really looking towards trans women of color and women and cisgender women of color to really sort of lead the way, that's how I was raised. So I'm here because of them. Without any of them, our lives depend on them being fully present and working together and struggling together. The key to our survival lies in our ability to create whole selves and whole communities and to undo the divisions that have been drawn across our lands and bodies. However, before we can achieve this kind of solidarity, it's important to highlight the kinds of bridges that need to be built and the binary busting that needs to be done before we can forget the kinds of alliances, before we can forge the kinds of alliances that deepen our understanding and practices of identity politics. We offer the examples of our own experiences as mixed-race feminists who see binary busting around race, gender, anti-Semitism as starting points in re-envisioning identity politics. Know your history. Really be community researchers. Talk to your queer elders. Make meals. Talk to each other. Figure out what are your values together and how you're going to struggle with each other. Because we have lots of time to build, but we do not have time to destroy each other. Thank you.
Can someone define cisgender? Cisgendered is often used as an equivalent for non-trans. It means a person whose assigned gender at birth matches up with the gender identity that they hold at this time. Sorry for that happening while I was answering my question, but I think cis comes from an actual like biological thing, or a linguistic thing, where cis is the opposite of trans as a prefix. So
it's like heterosexual is to homosexual, right? That's one way of thinking of it. Cisgender is to transgender.
Yeah.
Thank you. So
we're turning it over to Ken.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kim Ford. I'm with Kitchen Table Giving Circle, and I want to thank the organizers, everyone, for inviting me here. I knew there was stuff going on in the community. It's not new. Mm-hmm. As you said, it's not new. It's been going on. My experience has been within the Black lesbian community, mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I guess, to be diplomatic about it, that it comes up every now and then over and over again. But, over and over again, right? And I say that because I'll tell you a little bit about Kitchen Table Giving Circle. And based on my history within community organizations and foundations, I noticed who got funded last and least, primarily people of color. And since we're talking about queer funding, women.
Yeah.
So across the board. And so coming from a Black lesbian organization and then also wanting to open this up, because it's something in my learning. I was with African and Sexual Lesbians United for Societal Change. And my learning was what does the term woman really mean? Even before that, because I came out as an adult. I wasn't like a toddler and new. I came out as an adult. I know, because everybody thinks you know when you start walking around, you know. Sometimes you don't. And it's okay to come out as an adult. And we should support that and not assume everybody was born knowing. What happens is some of your staunchest supporters, activists, are the ones who came out later. Because we've been oppressed in other ways. So the freedom opens up all kinds of doors. So with African ancestral lesbians, one of the things we realize is how to be, as an organization that started out in 1974, at the start of a lot of movements, and this organization holding a space for, at the time it was just gay women. That was the term that was used. There was no other term used. It was gay women. Regardless, it didn't matter what else you were, what you said, and it was open to women of color. Eventually it became about Black lesbians, but that was the first organization in New York, and as far as I know, the first one in the country, where it was an out organization, and that's really key, because there were organizations around, but people were not out. You had parties in homes, private parties, names that you couldn't tell anything. Mm-hmm. You had to be on the list. You had to know somebody. So being out is still very, very recent in our collective history. So African Ancestral being, at the time, was Salsa Soul Sisters, mm-hmm. Third World Women, Inc. Being this out organization, as much as it was for queer women of color, were basically Black and Latina, marching Christopher Street, going to Washington. This was huge at the time. I came along much later, late 90s, early 2000s, into the organization, and I can't tell you what that meant for me to find some place to be all of myself, mm-hmm. how important that was, what that did for me, how healing that was for me, mm-hmm. to find this space, to find all these different women in the room. And as much as at that time it was now using the term lesbian, the space wasn't just for lesbians. And I have to say that was about Candace Boyce, one of my mentors, mm-hmm. who held that space. Mm-hmm. And because of her own coming up as, even as a butch lesbian, being told she wasn't butch enough, see, we all got these things that, mm-hmm. we're trying to qualify somebody by something, right? Mm-hmm. And being told she wasn't butch enough, but she was always going to be who she was. Or she was like the butch who wore women's underwear, she said. Because she liked, that's what she liked, her frills. So she was clear about that. But her identity was, she was a masculine identified female that she was clear on, which absolutely helped me in identifying me being a femme, mm-hmm. and nobody's stereotype of a femme. So, you want to call me an aggressive femme? Fine. I don't really care. But the bottom line is that I wasn't going to be reticent and sit and wait for you to come and ask me.
Get it.
So that was the goal. And we still have those stereotypes at work, mm-hmm. with each other. So, but she was also part of the Black Panther Party. And as an out lesbian, had a partner within the Black, Tupac's aunt, Tupac Shakur, Tupac's aunt was her partner for 5 years. She raised Tupac. Okay. This is our history of that we don't know. So when you see the Black Panther Party, know that there was a black guy here in New York who was not taking any names, not taking any prisoners, and she was doing what she needed to do. But this is the woman that was my mentor about how you create space, how you create community, and what that meant. And at the key of all of it was to operate with love for other people. And she didn't know how, you know, we all want to be that altruistic, but she did operate that way all of the time. So basically what I learned was how to create a space that was open and welcoming. And it was clear that it was a black lesbian space. It was clear. That's what it was. It was open to other folks to come in, depending on the meetings we had to make. I mean, there were white women that came. We made it clear that this was a space for, how this was a space for black lesbians, and that we had our one group, and you had any number of groups that you could go to, and that was fine. And that when the meetings were open, it was open. But how, and the impact that have in having people feel comfortable and speaking freely because somebody else is in the room. Learning to navigate that is not easy. It's hard. It takes a willingness to learn. It takes having everything you know, or you thought you knew, but up against something new. That's hard. You have to be willing to be uncomfortable, to sit with the discomfort, to get past it, to learn. Otherwise, you're not going to learn. And with that experience, one of the things that was coming up was, how are we trans-inclusive? And at the time, because we as much as we were all volunteer, we weren't paid, we had, instead of steering committees, we had boards. So it was a particular board, and we kept talking about what was happening in the community and realized that we didn't just want to be, we needed to be trans-inclusive. Inclusive of trans women, because there are trans women who identify as lesbians. Real clear on that. And I'm very clear on that. But how did we do that? How did we make that space? How do we hold that space? How do we start to talk about it? And we did what we could, which was a lot for us at the time, but, you know, it was, and I don't remember, somewhere in the 2000s, was to do some trans 101 workshops and invite trans women and trans men come in to talk, which happened, and some people got it, and some people didn't. Hopefully they learned as they went along, but that was because we were changing our literature, because the other thing that we knew, that we had learned, was simply because you use the term women does not mean it's an inclusive term. That was very, very clear to us, that we had to be, say, up front and center in our materials what we meant when we said the word woman. And that meant including trans women who identified as lesbians. And we said it like that. And if people got, the organization had been through a change when they were meeting at another space, and when they went to meet at the center, the LGBT, which was just the lesbian gay center at the time, they lost women. They lost women who didn't want to be associated with the center, not because it was white, but because they weren't comfortable with the terms lesbian and gay. And they felt that going to this place, you're going into a gay center in the West Village. I don't know how people didn't know, but they thought people didn't get it. So if they walked into this building, everyone in their family would know, even though their family probably never left the Bronx or Queens. They thought everyone would know. So they didn't. So the organization had been through that with every change. There are people who opt out. But when you're trying to be inclusive, when this is what your goal is, then you have to be real clear about who you're inviting. I mean, we've all had those times where we've been in, it's like, who's invited to the table? You either come, you're invited first, you can help set that table, or you're invited after the table is set. It's really hard to have a say in what's happening if the table's already set. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. But you need, so if you're planning something, how are you inclusive? So this is what we did. We didn't know who was going to come in the room. We weren't asking for anybody to self-identify, no disclosure. We just wanted to say, this is who we are. So I'm going to now fast forward. So that was my first experience in being very deliberate about how I worked. And eventually I left the organization and did some other stuff, and I was on the board of ALP for a while, which was a long time coming, and then finally happened. And then so that was really good for me, because it was kind of finding the place where things start meshing, because as you grow,
your political development, your social development, your personal development, you find the spaces that you used to frequent sometimes don't work for you anymore. Mm-hmm. You need to move on. And it's okay to move on to another space. And that's what I did. So, but eventually, seeing, wanting to put different things together, having the space, the working community, working because I worked at the Estrella Foundation, and saw how a trans woman of color was not supported, not saying anything that as an organization, but that folks thought they were ready and they weren't ready. Mm. And it was heartbreaking for me, as someone who tried to support as much as I could, but I wasn't ready, not because I didn't listen, but because of the support that this person needed outside of work, I couldn't give. I didn't know what that meant for this person to have a job like this and a space like this where they could be themselves. Mm. And them not having an organization that they could go to at that time that I could say, why don't you go here?
Yeah.
Why don't you, you know, maybe there's someplace here, when all they wanted to do was tell me everything that was going on. And all I could do was listen. Okay. So with all those experiences, I get to Kitchen Table Giving Circle. In being very clear, as much as this is that I wanted to be, I wanted to be a space where we could talk about philanthropy, where we do fundraising from ourselves as Black African descent queer women, and how we raise the money, be creative in how we raise the money, and that we gave it away to the organizations that we felt needed it the most, those that get fall through the cracks in funding most of the time. And because it's community-based, it's the members who decide, who present the organizations, bring them in, or present for the organizations, and then, so it's like, you know, like a present for the organization, because it's kind of undercover that they don't know they're getting the money. And we like it that way. Because, yes, see, so we collect the money, like, and not saying anything about Santa, whoever, but we kind of like, we're not prioritizing Santa by any means, but we're kind of like a susu, where we put, everybody puts money in the pot, but none of us get the pot. That's the Secret Santa part, where it goes to the organization. But I was also very clear that it was going to be trans-inclusive. And it was interesting because I was having multiple conversations with Black lesbians about what that meant. And it was almost like this, I'm a lesbian over here, trans woman over here. What do you mean a trans lesbian? It was like watching their head explode. And then my head was exploding because I was like, how do you think that could not be? But I realized the stereotype is that a trans woman operates as a straight woman. And it was really amazing to have those conversations with folks I thought were further along in their own development. But I had to have those conversations. And I made it clear, even at the early meetings, that this was going to be, and we were going to say, Black, African descent, lesbian, bi, trans, queer, women of color. So, and that's, it has to be that way. It has to be that way. I don't know any other way for it to be. Except to be. So at the beginning, if anybody had an issue with it, then we're just going to have a nice, long, drawn-out conversation and then remind them of who they knew, which I think was really key. When they thought about it, they were like, oh, yeah, okay. And that, so now the next conversation will be around privilege. Because I've heard, when Black women feel that they don't have privilege, I don't know how much victimhood is being bought into, and how we as people of color, and especially Black women, don't recognize where we have privilege because we're so used to being oppressed. We think that every time we do something, we're oppressed. So that's next on my agenda, is to have conversations around privilege. But so, Kitchen Table Giving Circle. We have a website, kitchentablegivingcircle.org. There's not a lot up there yet because we're still tweaking it, but it was my mandate, so you know it was going to be the organization's mandate, and I'm happy to say that we have members who agree. But I don't ask anybody to out themselves about anything because I really, at the end of the day, I don't care. If you give money, I care. No.
So thank you all
so much for giving such incredible, you know, personal, historical, and deep historical background. I think I'm really glad, we're all really glad to have you all in the room. I wanted to just talk about River's response just really briefly. We have a website which you can visit to see what we've been working on over the past 3 months, which is really to raise awareness around some troubling language that came up. I am an artist and a producer and like a media person, and I've shown my work at Rivers of Honey. I've organized genderqueer projects with friends of mine, two sort of older trans lesbian women, and we've done a show called Antigone, and we've done, Bryn was in Antigone, and I generally have a really wonderful experience of getting to be in a lot of different art spaces. I identify as genderqueer on the trans masculine spectrum, but it's really lovely to know that there are a lot of possibilities in art, there's a lot of possibilities in social circles to bring different people with different experiences together to make art together. And so that's the kind of, those are the kinds of spaces that I like to be a part of and that I like to celebrate. So personally, it was troubling for me to find out that a space that I had shown my work in was making it very difficult, kind of vague, like not really saying certain things but then backing away. And so there was just a lot of lack of clarity about the stance on the welcome, really, of trans women in that space. So I sort of, got on board with River's response, which is a really large group. It's about like 15 people who have been engaging really just online over emails, making a website, writing some documents together and trying to get endorsements and just spread awareness about what language is being used and how does language affect the way that we see each other, the way that we see ourselves, and how we can or cannot share spaces, come together in spaces, make art together. So I come from it really as an artist who, I think I came to it as an artist who refuses to participate in a space that does not allow my friends, my lovers, my family to be in that space. So I just wanted to sort of bring River's response into the room, and now that we have so much really clear lineages of history, we can see that, River's response is something that didn't just come up out of the blue, and the language that we were talking about is not an anomaly. Most of you probably, came here, probably already are familiar with our work, but we're not really here to talk about that specifically. We're really here to have a really broad conversation about what can we do moving forward, because it's really about taking this one sort of community point of rupture in the community and not harping on it at all. That's really not our intention. Certainly we want to acknowledge what we saw happening and we want to raise awareness, but we're not here to harp on anything. We're really here to think, okay, so we're coming up against something. This means we have to talk about it. This means we have to talk to each other. This means we have to talk to everybody, not just trans women, not just trans masculine folks. Like, everybody needs to be a part of this conversation. And what's been really inspiring to me to work with River's response is to see that almost every sector of sort of queer, gay, lesbian, trans-identified POCs are in conversation together. And it's really inspiring, and it means that we're having the right conversation. I think that's sort of, I just wanted to bring River's response into the room. And sort of Chris and I are kind of representing that, and just sort of give a little personal background around what made it
you know, what brought me into this.
Okay. So I'm going to talk from like my truth, from my experience, and why I got involved in this organizing effort. And thank you, Kim, for giving that history of that, because I feel the same way. I feel Rivers of Honey, for me, for a very long time, that's where I learned how to produce shows. It's where I gained, like, experience in being in a leadership role, where, you know, as a butch, dyke, lesbian of color, we're at work, I'm not, you know, my voice is not counted, and I'm not heard oftentimes. So it was really important for me to be part of that space because I also felt like I could be my full self.
Mm.
And it kind of like became, you know, in a sense, you know, like chosen family. But I wanted to say something that another friend of mine brought up was that sometimes even within our chosen families, we replicate the same, sort of the same dynamics. So, you know, there's silencing that happens. You don't want to air out their, you know, your family's dirty laundry. You don't want to trigger anyone. You don't want to, you want to avoid conflict at all costs. You know, and a lot of that is, you know, based on fear. So for me, it was important to get involved or try to have a dialogue because this was my family at one point. And I also want to thank everybody for coming because I don't think any of us expected this kind of turnout. We didn't expect the website to hit Puerto Rico or Canada or whatever. You know, it's like, wow, okay, this is something that is important in our community and that needs to be talked about because obviously we're getting folks from everywhere. I also wanted to say, and this is a little bit of, like, dispelling some myths, is that at Rivers of Honey, at least in my experience, when I was a producer there, there were always trans and gender nonconforming people involved, either staffing, either, you know, as artists, supporters, audience members. So, you know, it's, like, kind of like going again back to what Naomi said. It's like, you know, like ousting trans women or trans folks that helped to build this magical space. So it was important for me to address that. And then also, I also, on my like 9-to-5, I work in a legal organization, and I can't tell you the number of stories I hear on a day-to-day basis where transgender women of color in particular are attacked, are fired from their jobs, are kicked out of their homes because of who they are. And so for me, as Chris, could not live with myself, you know, be part of an organization or a former producer of an organization that was, you know, doing the same thing. So, and my intention, or at least in getting involved, is to try to open some kind of dialogue because I feel like if this is a space that at one point nurtured me, then, you know, there has to be some kind of conversation mm-hmm. to happen, you know. So, I've come here today, like, not really having any answers to make that happen. How do we hold each other accountable? How do we challenge each other despite the fear? You know, how do we foster open and honest dialogue? I don't have those answers, but my hope is that, you know, I'll get some feedback from you guys. You know, we'll work this out together. So,
and there's something I also want to point out. We've been, you know, basically online, mostly online organizing for about 3 months now. And over the course of those 3 months, the response specifically from Rivers of Honey has kind of changed a lot. Like, it's really changed it, and it's been a bit of a moving target for us because we are questioning something. We asked as a group, for accountability, meaning please make your language clear. What is the policy? You know, and it went this way and it went that way. And I do want to point out that today an open letter was written that finally makes it clear that, yes, trans women are acknowledged and invited into the space. And if it hadn't been for us, I'm just going to say it frankly, if it hadn't been for us saying, no, we're going to keep continuing to challenge you until you make it clear, there wouldn't be clarity. And I'm not saying this like, you know, pat ourselves on the back, but when there isn't clarity, that's very harmful. Lack of clarity is as harmful as, you know, accusations or violence. And sometimes you have to just, like, stand there and wait until somebody answers you directly. And it's really actually exciting personally for me to see that that has happened to some level. There are still some issues. Yeah, I'm going to wrap up. There are still some issues about, you know, whether trans women are allowed to produce or if they're just invited as audience. It's still not clear on that level. But, you know, seeing that letter today, especially knowing that this talk was going to happen, is like, I want to bring in some positivity because there is a level of change that's happening. There is dialogue. Things are moving. Education is happening. And different people are understanding each other. So, you know, we're going to move into sort of the way forward section, which, you know, we're going to, like, open up and start talking about steps forward. And I just want to acknowledge that work that is being done, that has been done, is sort of helping the situation. So we should come with, like, a really positive sense that it's important to do this work because it makes a result and because we meet each other and because we get to share space together and open up space even further.
Thank you.
We're going to take about the next roughly 20 minutes to open up a discussion with all of you. I just do want to revisit quickly the guidelines. You can see them up there, but just to make sure that we're, you know, having respectful discussion, speaking from your own experience, assuming best intentions, and still being able to challenge each other where we disagree and really try to hear each other and learn each other as well. So we'll do the stack.
I'll be keeping stack. If you want to talk, make eye contact with me off the channel. Like, if I don't see you, you may not get all it. So make sure you make eye contact with me.
So let's take some hands.
Okay, right here.
Okay, so I'm feeling very full right now. Thank you to the panel for all your comments. You know, very thought-provoking. I just wanted to say I recently came out and identified as trans on the masculine spectrum. And I think I would have come out sooner if I hadn't been so badly criticized by other women for being queer. I just realized sitting here how often I've had to qualify myself, like my orientation, before entering particular spaces. And you know, I'm sitting here just kind of sitting in the contradictions, because I feel as though the masculinity that I'm reaching for is very much informed by my feminine side, which is not going anywhere. You know, like I, for the past 10 years, have been raising my voice against rape and sexual assault because of personal experience. I have a little sister who's 7 years younger than I am, and I want to preserve for her the experience of being able to have relationships and fall in love and not have it marred by violence. So it actually makes perfect sense to me that I would be organizing with a women's organization around that issue. But I just, you know, like I've recently in recent months I've been tying myself in knots trying to figure out, well, where am I supposed to go? Mm-hmm. You know, like, where am I supposed to be? You know, where are my contributions as an artist and an activist going to be valued? Where are they going to be welcomed? And I'm frustrated. And I'm frustrated in particular sometimes with lesbians, because I would like to be able to build better coalition, and I don't know how. You know, so like, I guess there's no question, just like a couple of comments that are full of kind of pain and hurt and not knowing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
I was going to say one thing, maybe two things, kind of in response to what you said. I was an assistant producer for Rivers of Honey back when it actually switched from language of saying all women of color to all self-identified women of color. That was the next step in the progression. That was like, we're not going to identify who that is. It's for women of color to identify for themselves who it is. To then saying women and trans people of color. And I think that was the shorthand for all folks. The intention was for all folks who faced gender oppression because of their gender, whether they were born women, whether their gender identity is not what it's supposed to be, but a shared understanding of a shared oppression. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, a shared source of oppression. And that's part of why I say that kind of in response to that, because I think we recognize that there were lots of people with many different gender identities who are going through shit for many of the same reasons. Mm-hmm. That patriarchy is actually what works against trans women. It's what works against trans men. It's basically supposed to preserve power for one very discrete class, which is non-trans or cisgendered men. And because of identifying that, it was important for us to say, you know, this is a space where everyone who can't get up on a stage, who can't find anyone to produce them, to let them perform, to let them be themselves, because of that.
Yeah.
That's why it was so shocking to see it go very much away from that, and also very specifically away from that excluding trans women. Away from that being a women's space that excluded trans women, where folks who are more willing to have men, people who identify as men, who are men, who receive male privilege, even though if they were found out as trans men, they wouldn't get that privilege taken away, but that was acceptable in a women's space, and trans women were not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bringing that here, I think, is very important, especially because, and this is more the second point I wanted to make, I think Zavi is very right to point out that there is a positive trend in the letter that was put out today. But it came with two very specific negative things. One is that it said that the Facebook posts and the Rivers of Honey community website should be taken down. Mm-hmm. And two is that it specifically said that all women, cisgender, and trans women were welcome in this space. But it said nothing to address very specific statements that trans women would not be allowed to produce or perform at Rivers of Honey. So I feel like we should be aware that it came with a request to be quiet. And I think that really indicates that it was an attempt to silence. Mm-hmm. That's speaking for myself, but I feel like we have to keep that in mind. And that I hope that through this work, that maybe folks involved in Rivers of Honey might rethink the exclusion and the stepping back from a space that understands our shared struggles and shared oppression, and that also this community together can do things positive like this, like the show that's happening at WOW tomorrow night, which is called Transformation. There's actually a theater collective called Department of Transformation that is funny. There's two transformations going on, and they're both brilliant, but I think all these things that we're talking about identify this shared oppression, identify, not shared oppression, but shared solidarity too, because we can't always be in the negative. There's shared oppression, there's shared solidarity, there's shared kinship, there's shared love. So I hope that this helps those kind of spaces flourish, and that you have a space that
can. Okay. you're next.
If anyone wants to ask the panelists questions, that they're here for that too. So. I didn't see. You have none?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
My name is Amiani Rivera Velasquez, and one of the many compelling points that I have heard throughout some of the panelists' discussions, and you know, through your very evocative comment and what Jeff was saying, and I just want to highlight something that this is probably not a discussion about should separate spaces exist. I have been involved in creating many separate spaces for people of color, for women identified folks. I have been very involved in creating those spaces. But I think that the question that is very important here to address today is like, can a space that used to be inclusive stop being inclusive?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that that has been a question that has drawn me strongly into this conversation of like, it has been the norm since like the early 2000s, and I'm currently new to New York. I've been here less than 5 years, and I was welcomed into this community, and the trans aspect was what got me there, but not because I identify as such. I'm clearly a very femme-presenting queer woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, it was sort of like I am as strong as a trans ally and advocate, and it was the trans inclusion that what drove me to this space. It's like when you get like post promotion, and then you go and you're like, oh, this is great, this is true, this is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, actually, no, I'm not going to take the trans part out. And you're like, in shock, you know. So I think that it is not about should there be separate space for women. Of course there should be separate space for women. Should there be separate space for queer women of color? Of course there should be separate space for queer women of color. Can a space that used to be inclusive of trans folks that identify as queer women of color change that? I think that that's the real question for me.
Yeah, thanks. So I was just going to ask if folks know, like, how they're identifying. Like, if someone says, I want to produce, like, how are they identifying that person is trans-identified? Is it just, like, they're guessing by how people are look? And then to go off of, you said in the letter today, which I also read, there was kind of this, like, quieting or shushing of the response. And I also noticed that they wrote in there, you know, we've been asked about a policy, and to that we say, we have no policy, which I think just really lets the group, like, not address, you know what I mean? Like, it just lets them get away with not addressing the question or the issue so that they can just keep saying, just being really vague about it. And I wonder, for me, like, coming to this space, I really wonder if we, as a collective group, can think about how, I don't know, how to, like, I guess I have some questions, like, you two, because, like, how can we, like, push on that if they're just going to be like, well, we don't have one. We don't want to make one.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so, sorry, to go back to my question, if you know how they're...
I don't know what the actual practice is.
Mm-hmm.
What became really clear to us was that language was changed, which implied a policing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There were some mentions of women of color being able to be the first at the door, which to us linguistically implied that trans women had to get on the back of the line. And that's something that we brought up in a lot of our language as part of our response. It's not clear what the method is, it's not clear what the practice is, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think, furthermore, to the idea of, like, someone's asking you, what's your policy, and you say, we don't have a policy, I think, my personal experience being part of this group, it's clear that you can push more and more and get even more and more evasive answers. That's fine. Right? Like, for me, my personal choice is, if you're not being clear, I'm not going to come as an artist, and I'm not going to come as an audience member.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal choice. Until the policy is there, I can make my decision, right? And I can't make it until it's there. I think the takeaway is, maybe you can't hold accountability. Maybe people don't want to answer your question,
yeah.
And that's fine, but then you have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just, for me, that's just as erroneous as saying, actually, yes, we're exclusive, and no, trans women will be police at the door, and blah, blah, blah. For me, the vagueness is just as implicating, right? And I think what's come out of that vagueness, though, is a real clarity for other folks, right? Because now we have a space at WOW, there's going to be a premiere show tomorrow night where it's very clear what the deal is. It's very clear what the policy is. We'll, you know, have Zakiya will tell us a little bit about that show, but it doesn't it disheartens me not to get an answer, but it doesn't dishearten me to see that not having an answer over here means that people are going to be really clear and other spaces will open up. So that's my takeaway from it. I think it would be interesting to actually ask the folks who are remaining at Rivers of Honey, because a lot of folks left because of that language and the lack of clarity. It would be interesting, but in every attempt that we've made, it's just been vague. So it's kind of like an uphill battle that personally I don't think is worth investing in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've got time for one or two more, if anybody wants. Otherwise, we can wrap up. But if anyone else wants to say anything, by all means.
I think to maybe one ask Jack, when you were an assistant producer and the language changed from women identified and then eventually to women and trans folk, what year was that roughly?
2003, 2004. It's one of those.
Okay, so it was
it was 8 years ago.
For 8 years. And for you, I think my thought is how do you hold people accountable? I think Zabe is absolutely right. There's a point where you just have to make a decision as a patron, as an artist, to be involved, and not just in Rivers, but the Rivers, the Mistresses, blah, blah, blah. Or tell people. There are lots of people who still don't know. Like, I went to Mistress in 2009 and was told that trans women were not included, and at the time, I was okay with that. But when I got on the land and saw trans men, I was confused. And then began to, you know, Chris educates me all the time. I'm like, really ignorant. Butters, you need to read this. And so I can never go back to Mistress anymore. Because she had a conversation with me. Because I had these conversations, you know. So I think sometimes it's about participating and making that silent vote, but it's also about talking to people and letting other people know, and maybe that's how you hold Mistress accountable, how you hold Rivers accountable, and other organizations that are implementing practices or that are being unclear when you're asking them as a community member, and especially since they say they serve you, the community. What's your policy? Tell people, because a lot of people still don't know.
I also think, like, what I heard from some of the folks that spoke is that I think in terms of hearing about what happened and not having conversations a lot with some of my queer women of color friends, because I was, like, afraid to be, like, what are they going to really think and say? And so I actually – and so just because I tried to avoid it didn't mean it wasn't going to come at me. And so that was, like, a really sad moment to sort of figure out how folks can be trans male allies but not trans women of color or trans women allies. So that was, like, a kind of a heartbreak moment. But I think the thing that I want, I hope that folks sort of take away is that as much as this is happening, right, is that I think the sort of inspiration of, like, a legacy that Occupy Wall Street is sort of connected to and a part of, but I think that creating spaces that are inclusive and reflective, that are POC-specific or multiracial, however you want to have it, is that you can, that it's possible, right? We have artists here, we have artists in the audience, we have people who've produced shows
who know what that is about, what it means, what it takes logistically, politically, spirit-wise, on how to do that kind of work. So it's like we have people present. So if that's something that you want to do, is create spaces that are really reflective of all of you, of your whole self, that it's like, now is the time. Mm-hmm. Now is really the time. So using what can feel like a hurt and a pain around being like, why is this happening? Is to turn it into, all right, that's cool. Like, we love you. That's where you're at. But I'm going to figure out with maybe some other folks who want to have some sort of shared value struggle and kinship. And then we have people in the room who've been part of those processes as artists, as contributors to art, to do that.
Sakia, do you want to talk about transformation? I think that's a really good point.
For 2 seconds. I don't know if I have a lot to say, but we have a fabulous show. This show is born out of the exclusion of voices that once were included. This show is also born out of the fact that even Rivers is a show that happens at WOW, but is separate and apart from WOW. Tomorrow it could leave and be at the Bowery Poetry Cafe if it wanted to. But within the WOW space, the language is about being inclusive of everything. AIDS, disability, gender nonconforming, trans folk. And I'm trying to help in creating, Chris and I are Butters and Poppy, and we do shows all around town and show all of our queer fabulousness.
Yes.
Right? But right now, for 6 months, I'm going to put my energy into making sure that in the space that says, in the mission space, that they're inclusive, that inclusion really happens. And so tomorrow is the first show or cabaret in which, again, you will see beautiful queer fabulousness and whatever that means for you. You will see trans women, you will see gender nonconforming, and you will just have a great time and a great show. Please come out and support. Starts at 7:30. Well, the doors.
Where is it?
Oh, WOW Cafe Theater. What's the address, Chris?
59 4th Street.
See, you guys are great. Come out, support. You know, it's a $10 donation. You know, but we'll do it on a love sliding scale because we really want to get this thing growing and make a space that is inclusive for everyone and really lives up to that. And so on that note, I'm going to step back.
Wait, can you step back? If people in the audience themselves or people in their communities want to get on board with producing or performing a future transformation show, how would they do that?
That's excellent. Right now we have, thank you, we have Transformation Cabaret on Facebook. We have a Tumblr page, which I don't know really well yet, but I'm sure it's Transformation Cabaret Tumblr. But most importantly, transformationcabaret@gmail.com. Worst case. Did I say that wrong?
No, it was just a little pause to call.
Right? Oh, okay.
Or just come talk to you after.
Oh, or come talk to me. Same thing for Kitchen Table Giving Circle. I'm working with that. I'll have one mailing list, and we'll share it. How about that?
And
Butter's Poppy. Yeah. So it's so funny because I'm like layered in everything. Former Rivers producer, Butter's Poppy, African Ancestral Women's United for Societal Change, Kitchen Table Giving Circle. So there's just an evolution here that I reflect, and I thank everybody for that. And again, whatever I forgot, because it's possible, just see me at the end. All right, thank you.
The reason I didn't get to say it all, like why I joined this collective, I've not been a producer or performer at Rivers of Honey. I do identify as a queer woman of color,
and my gender identity is like super complicated at this point. I kind of identify with what you said, Kim, like having an evolution of your own sexual orientation. I feel like I have very much an evolution of my gender identity, but I present as a cisgender femme, so I get that. And my partner is a transgender man of color, and I've had a lot of transgender men and like gender queer female bodied people in my life as lovers and friends and community members, because of the way that we as queer people of color tend to build communities with like lesbians as a foundation over here as young people, and then like gay men quote unquote over here, and then the ways our communities sort of lift up as in very binary spaces out of that. So it's only really recently in my life through my partner that I have made like really deep friendship connections with trans women of color. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like trans women of color don't come into cisgender women of color spaces very often because they're not welcome, right? Like I grew up in my queerness, I came out, gosh, over a decade ago, and you know, came up through spaces like Lover Girl and other like lesbian of color spaces, you know, more recently like Caddyshack and stuff, and, you know, like that was my community. I'm from the New York area, and it's really deep to me that I've been out as queer since like 1998, and now I'm in my 30s, and I'm only now starting to build like deep camaraderie and community with trans women of color, and it's only because my trans male of color partner is a feminist and is like very much in trans women of color community. So I want us to think about that, you know, a lot. Like, how could it be that, you know, people could go like a decade or more without really ever crossing like friendship paths, mm-hmm. right, with people across gender identity lines, even though we have shared oppression. And just on that note of shared oppression, one thing that brought me into this space is that some of the folks who were involved in the current Rivers of Honey production and fighting for exclusion were putting forward statements publicly on blogs and whatnot about being non-transgender women who had survived sexual violence as young girls. Mm-hmm. And my own community work is currently as the project coordinator and a cast member of Secret Survivors, which is a theater project that some of you might know, featuring me and LL and some other survivors of child sexual abuse. So, like, I was raped as a little girl for, like, 8 years, you know, by a cisgender man who was my father, right? And so I understand, like, fear of male bodies and, like, fear of you know, an older person, a male person who committed harm against me. But also in my adult life, I had an abusive, non-transgender, cisgender female partner, mm-hmm. right? So this notion that we are somehow all safer without penises in the room or whatever that's about is kind of whack, right? Like, if domestic violence doesn't exist in non-transgender female communities, right? As if we don't harm each other as non-transgender women, like, what are we really protecting ourselves from? And then, to flip it even more, in my friendship conversations with transgender women of color, like, read reports, read statistics, like who is the largest target mm-hmm. of sexual violence mm-hmm. in the world right now mm-hmm. is transgender women of color. Mm-hmm. So if you want, if you have been through rape and sexual assault like I have, and you want to relate to another human being who has also had that experience, talk to a transgender woman of color, because like statistically, more often than not, she'll be able to relate as well, mm-hmm. right? So I've actually like found a lot more solidarity there in a way that I never imagined I would. And, mm-hmm. and I just really related to Kim, like you're art of being able to learn and like push yourself. Like I feel like I have learned a lot as a trans ally recently, and I wish that some folks from Rivers of Honey were here to be able to like have that dialogue with, because I took a lot of offense at the argument being put forward that like as sexual violence survivors that we needed to keep ourselves safe from trans women, right? Because mm-hmm. that doesn't match my experience at all. Mm-hmm. So
thank you.
Yeah, so I think like one of the things that we did want to talk about with you all was like any next steps that anyone else in the room wanted to put forward that we as a community have to hold, to bring forward. Certainly holding other dialogues like this, supporting inclusive spaces like SRLP, the Sylvia Rivera Law Project in this building, QEJ, Queers for Economic Justice, where we're meeting right now, the Audre Lorde Project, queer, all organizations in this building that are trans-inclusive and queer-inclusive, along with some of the ones that Kim and others talked about on the panel. And just, you know, I think I'll pass the mic to Sarah and then other closing messages.
I think a more important thing is that this whole building
it's doing amazing work. It's a whole building.
We got four.
We support many of the initiatives that come here. Like, thank you to TJ for allowing us to have this conversation here today. And also, one of the things that we also wanted to say is that, of course, we'll do transformation tomorrow at 7. And you know, is it okay to open up the space to see what people like? The things are like a few things that we thought of, but we also want to hear, after having this conversation with you all, what are some of the thoughts that you think could help, you know, move the conversation forward? Like, what other ideas, you know, like, it's like, oh my god, I have this high performance. So I think that we're going to open up, like, the floor a little bit for that.
And if you can take, sure, absolutely. Okay. So the question, we're looking at the next steps. Yeah. Next steps. You have suggestions of how to, like, as a community or you yourself or in your friend circles, either things that you would want to see or things that you feel committed to.
So hard with all the, you know, researches that get thrown back and forth to, like, just really narrow it down to the truth. And so I would just say, like, you know, to go out to your friends, your community, your Facebook, your blogs, or whatever, and spread the truth, like, direct people, you know, to our website so they can really be informed, and just sort of just to, like, I guess to get people on board and like moving in the right direction and not regressing, but always like thinking progressively, thinking about love. Always coming from a place of love, because you know love is inclusion, love is not exclusion. Mm-hmm. And just to have that basic human understanding, you know, relating to somebody else, whatever your personal differences are, however you feel about someone else, just to always come from a place of love and be like, you know, would you want to be that person being excluded from the space for no reason? For no reason other than that you're different from someone else, or you don't fit my definition of what you should be or who you should be. So just again, I think it was even mentioned, like, spread the word, get people talking about it, especially like after what Jack said, where there's a message coming from the people that there was trying to silence, you know, and the web pages. Exactly what people want to stop, that's exactly where you should go. That's where the truth is, and that's where the love is.
I'm gonna go here first.
I'm back first.
Okay. My name is Kimberlyn. One thing that someone mentioned, and I didn't get this person's name, but it completely resonated really strongly, was talking about how bodies are a connecting force between trans women and cis women. I really would love to see workshops or some sort of actions created to sort of bring this message out to people. Because I think in that way, like, I don't know, it was just like really hard hitting, and I feel like in some organizing groups that I've been a part of, that connection was missing a lot of the time, and I'd really like to see that put forward. So, I don't know, some sort of event, I'm totally down.
I just had an idea. I wondered maybe if it would be possible to, because we have like such an exploding mix of people here right now. Maybe like if people were willing to bring us all back together in early January, you know, like for the new year, some people going out and drinking, like sitting, or maybe in addition to.
Can I follow up by saying, after the meeting today, you
So that anybody that wants to continue having conversations that we have started today, because it's just the beginning, to join us for the drinking and the conversation. And this person right here is going to be taking
what's your name?
Dominic.
Dominic
will be taking
names
and emails.
Who helped?
I just want to clarify the stack. We've got one, two, and then in the back, was there something?
Did you get two in the front?
Oh, then okay, the one, two, three, and then was there another in the back?
Okay.
Okay.
So, my name is Olive Demetrius.
Hello, Olive.
Yeah, I just want to point out that, like, a lot of people who are queer identified and all the bad and taboo is weird if one can be queer are not politically so. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They just kind of live their lives, and they don't go to anybody's group. They won't go to anybody's workshop. They're not gonna do it. They're just not gonna do it. In fact, you know, occasionally I am this person. You know, and I have been, you know, slightly gay famous in my time. I feel like for what they do probably most often to express their queerness is go to a party, right? So I feel like those of us who know promoters who are necessarily, who don't really care one way or the other, but are just like, oh, I can add this word to my flyers, just so people just kind of get used to it. Mm-hmm. Like, ladies party, trans inclusive. Just so people just get used to it and just see it as a commonplace thing. Mm-hmm. So when they don't see it, they'll notice it more.
Mm-hmm.
I think, because we all know.
Okay,
Jack
is here.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Speaking of flyers.
Bam! Speaking of bringing in the new year,
January
1st, hopefully you guys will still be sober.
I'm the president in training of African Ancestral Lesbians United for Social Change, and we have societal members united for social change. We want to invite you to our annual Kwanzaa, which is the 34th, and we hope to see you all there. We can continue the conversation, present some principles. You don't have to look like me to be there, you can look like yourselves. So I just want everyone to come out, and I will be distributing flyers if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go. Two ideas for next steps. One, jumping off of maybe an art mapping. There's something in the mental health community called mad mapping, where you map, like doing that and creating a map of spaces that within like a little geographic map and go, okay, here's where ALP is, here's where, and then here's where parties are held, or creating mapping of spaces that are maybe safe or trans inclusive. And making that maybe more of an artistic project instead of just a generic map might be fun and interesting. And one of the other ideas that came up when I was at the queer OWS meeting last night was a hotline. Like, you can set up a Google Voice hotline for people to call in and speak about things and get back to each other for those who don't have internet access, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Was there anyone else who wanted to say anything?
Okay,
is that a good idea? Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. Oh, I want to say one thing.
Go for it.
In terms of artistry, and especially at WOW, as we build and develop transformation cabaret, you know, Kim talks about privilege, and I guess I move with a certain level of cisgender privilege. I don't know a lot of, I know queer, gender non-conforming people, but I don't know a lot of trans women, and I think that that's a voice that I would like her work to be particularly showcased at River. So if any of you have friends who are performers, please recommend them. If any of you are performers,
do you mean
really
transformation or
transformation?
Okay.
Did I say with no end?
Yeah.
You did.
It's okay.
Did some thank yous. We really wanted to thank QEJ and in particular JTool, who connected us to the space and was extremely helpful and amazingly open. And we want to thank our panelists. Such amazing words, such important words, and such beautiful words, I think. We want to thank the 15-plus folks that have made River's Response what it is over the past 3 months. We want to thank our hundreds of endorsers all over the world who are listening in. We want to thank you all for being here, because it really means a lot to us. It's been pretty emotional over the past 3 months for us. It's been really emotional. And we were just like spending 3 months trying to figure out how to do the right thing, I think. And this feels really right to me. And I'm really happy that we can share this space together. Who else do we want to thank?
We want to thank Fierce and SRLP for the chairs that you're sitting on. And all of you for coming and participating openly. Thank you.